Hello, this is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we are going to bring you, such an exciting hour of local sports talk here on MSO. Is that not right, Coach?
Yes, it is, Rick. It's always exciting.
You got it. All right, and I have to do one more name drop, Coach. I can't let it go. Been in touch with Barry Hanrahan, and the Flyers, they run hot and cold this year. Barry, of course, in the front office of the Flyers, they run hot and cold. And I got a nice little card from Barry and his family. They're doing fine, and their sons are doing great. And it's always great when the kids check in, as adults. And I know you have that happen a lot with your coaching over the years. And do they still do? Well, you're not around the coaching aspects anymore, but it's great when you see guys that you hope you mentored back in the past.
Oh yeah, I know that there are a couple of guys that who played for me got into youth coaching, which was really good, and mm-hmm. There are a couple that I knew when they played for me that their level of interest would eventually, that's something that they would want to do, and they did very well at it.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. All right, we're going to have our usual cast of characters tonight, Mike Grenier and Steve Krause. They're both sports journalists, and lots to talk about in the sports world. I mean, it's astounding to me. I mean, astounding to me that a baseball player can garner $700 million in salary. I can't fathom that. I just don't understand that. And I guess Major League Baseball now is for the corporate people, I guess. But Coach, I got to ask you. I think the Red Sox might think that Red Sox Nation is stupid because the Craig Breslow curtain his reign so far, his introduction to Red Sox baseball at this level seems awfully similar to Heim Bloom's, awfully similar. They trade away a starter in right field, a right fielder, a starter, a decent ball player, above average, average to above average. They get three minor leaguers. Give me a break. And then they're telling us, it's a new era and so on. Sounds like the same old AA, AAA, curtain that they've been pulling down over us for the last 3 or 4 years. And then on top of that, Tim, the Yankees, they get Verdugo, they trade two minor leaguers, and they get, an all-star super home run hitter and an all-star left fielder as well. So they've retooled their outfield by giving up two minor leaguers. So same old for the Red Sox.
Well, it's what everybody used to say about, Bill Belichick. All the coaches in the league are playing checkers, and he's playing chess. And Frank Cashman just wants to sit there and laugh. And yeah, they've gone through a couple of lean years, but they've actually gone out and got quality ball plays, and some have worked out and some haven't. But they keep going after it, and it's gonna prove more beneficial than any of the Red Sox moves over the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, and the thing.
Where did Steve Verdugo go? He was colorful. He was energetic. He was always good copy for the writers. And it does irk you to see them make the trades that they do. We trade away, like I say, start up a two fielders, two minor leaguers rather, and then the kid they got from Cincinnati is more on the downside of his career than on the upside of his career.
Right. He's damaged goods, and that was a late acquisition. Well, not late. It's still in the hot stove season. But Tim, I go back to the days when you give up a player like Verdugo, you should get something in return. And the biggest blockbuster I remember as a kid was you remember when Rocky Colavito was traded for Harvey Keene, I think it was.
No, actually, I was a little kid when that happened.
Man. So was I. But it was Harvey Keene for Rocky Colavito when I had the baseball cards and stuff. And that was a trade of two major leaguers at the heights of their careers. And, you know, that talk about a blockbuster. I think it was Keene for Colavito, or was it – no, it wasn't Kalon. It was Harvey Keene for Rocky Colavito. And then, you know, trade – you see trades like that, and, you know, it's good for one team and good for the other. But what irks me, Tim, is the highest prices in Major League Baseball, and then they're selling you a bill of goods by getting, again, double-A and triple-A players. It's just unbelievable. I just can't understand it. And then on the other end of the spectrum – you know, Ohtani's salary doesn't make any sense. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, I saw that number and I went, wow, and that's all guaranteed money.
Well,
the question is, are they going to pitch him?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, not next year.
What happened this year? They had to shut him down.
Yeah. Well, they said he's not supposed to. He's not supposed to pitch in 24. So, that's part of the deal.
Okay. So, you know, he gives the shoulder a chance to rest.
Yeah.
But then again, you're going to bring him back and pitch in another year. Well, I'm not sure that's the best thing either. But $70 million for a ball player. It's gotten so far out of whack. The numbers should not surprise us. That's, you know, and that's the thing. And the Fenway Sports Group, I don't know what to do with the money because they're not spending it on the Liverpool soccer team either, I can tell you that. Because there's a lot of talk about that over there as well, about the Fenway Group not really taking care of business for them either in the transfer market, as they call it. But you just have to shake your head, and you know, how do families afford to go? You know, you look at the crowds, and you look at the young people, and there's people with their kids, and you're going, you know, are they sitting in the company seats? Are companies buying blocks of seats and then giving them away to their workers to go? Because, you know, holy moly, I just can't see it.
No.
I remember going and sitting up in the right field bleachers at Fenway Park in 93 or 94, I think it was, and it was $26, and I paid it because I'd never sat up there before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before it was all done over. And it was $26. I'm going, well, I'll pay it because I've never been up there. And it was the place to sit, I discovered, because you can see every corner of the field.
Well,
now, since it's all done over, when I first did it over, because I don't know what it costs right now, but it costs you, for one of the round tables, it costs you $100 per chair. And there were four chairs in a round table. So sitting at the table costs you minimum $400.
Yep. Yep.
And then it was parking. And then, it was food and drink. You know, you're talking $600-$700 a night.
Yep.
See your Red Sox game.
And how many seats at Fenway are obstructed view? And I wonder if you still get a discount for those. I bet you don't.
No, I don't believe you do. I've sat behind a few of them.
Well, I did back in the day when I was a kid. I didn't care because I got a discount on it. So it didn't matter. But now it's just, I don't know, it's absurd. But the good news is that the high school winter sports season is underway, even though we don't have the solstice for another week and a half or so, 10 days as a matter of fact. And Danvers High School hockey has already won. Triton Hockey has already won, and I don't think we're going to be able to get many scores. I couldn't get any scores yet tonight. There are only a few games on the schedule, and Bill has posted that up. We have a lot of high school previews up on the website. Bill has done a great work doing the scoreboard, actually just sports news up there from the area. So if you'll check that out, don't forget also you've got the Salem News Sports Writers show. Forgive my throat, forgive my voice here. But the Salem News Sports Writers will be on tomorrow with Bill Newell. That'll be dropped around 8 o'clock in the morning. And I can guarantee you they'll be giving a lot of high school previews as well. And then, of course, toward the end of the week on Thursday, it's the Sports Desk, the North Shore Sports Desk with Dominic Nicastro and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk with interviews and features and all kinds of good stuff with Dom. He does a great job for the Sports Desk at the end of the week, and that's Thursday, probably around 8 o'clock. So that is that. Now, Tim and I tonight, we'll be bringing on Steve Krause here in just a minute. And one of the things that I want to talk about this evening, in lieu of what's going on with the Red Sox and their so-called trades, is your favorite trade. And by that, I mean not necessarily something that that the newspapers have touted as a great trade or great for this team or great for that team, but I'm talking about personal. And it could be in any sport at any time. We've read about the Babe Ruth thing, and we certainly know about the Mookie Betts thing. But I want to talk about the favorite trade. I have one. In fact, during the break, I've got to look up who was involved in it because I don't even remember who one team sent to the other. But I know what one team got, and I thought it was the greatest trade I've ever known about. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll see if we can bring in Steve Krause here in a second, and Steve and Tim will get it going for us. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, and again, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell working diligently back at Sports Central. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back. Waiting for Steve Krause to check in for us. Tim Kearns and I. And Steve is calling my cell phone. So stand with us. Hi, Steve. You're on our cell phone. I did the same thing to Tim. All right. Yeah. Let me see here how to do this. All right. I'm going to try to call you back in just a second here. So hang in there. Yeah, I'll call you back on your cell phone.
Okay, bye.
All right, thanks. Did it again, Tim. One of those nights. Oh, my aching back. So let's see if I can find Steve's number here, and I'll dial that up. And you know what's going to happen, Tim, so I'll get back to you if I cut you off. Ah, goodness gracious. I miss you in studio here. That's when it used to work. All right. Here's his number. Bada bing, bada boom. No, that's... Oh, it's not the cell phone number. I had it in the wrong place. All right, be right back. All right, Steve, you there? Oh, this is fun. Ba-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum. Oh, it's fun getting old and messing things up. Try it again. Well, That says cell phone number. That's, I dialed that one.
Hello.
All right. Do I have the right number this time?
Yep, you have the right number. Here's Stephen. Hold on.
Okay, thanks. Sorry about that. Oh, goodness gracious.
It's just like a Chinese fire drill, for heaven's sake.
Well, it's my fault. It's my fault. Hold on. Now I got to get Tim back. It is. It's all my fault. Hold on. Be right back. Be right back.
Hang up on me.
All right, there we go. Now you guys can carve me up. Steve, Tim's here. Tim, Steve's here.
All right, well, here we go. We're good now.
All right. I hope so. Tim?
I'm good.
Okay.
Well, all right, hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm good, Steve. I'm good.
All right, boys. Steve, the first thing we were talking about was what I thought were magic tricks by the Red Sox in their so-called, you know, new era, trading minor leaguers and giving up a major leaguer and so on, and then watching what the Yankees did over on their side of things, just absolutely bringing in a brand new outfield. And then we were talking about Ohtani's salary, and I don't know if we want to get into that or not, but what I want to do tonight is ask you guys about your favorite trade. You know, and it can be in any sport at any time. No restrictions on that. So let's start with that, Steve, because that's sort of the topic that I want to get into. I think we can have some fun with that. So
I have two, and I'm trying to bounce one off the other. One of them is the trade with the Chicago Blackhawks that brought Phil Esposito to the Bruins.
You stole my thunder.
Huh?
You stole my thunder. Go ahead.
But the bigger one to me, and the one that just, I really was the heist to end all heists by Red Auerbach, is the trade that brought Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale to Boston for what essentially became Joe Barry Carroll. You know, that was just, that was, he should have been put in jail for that, Auerbach. that was such highway robbery, and the fact that the Golden State Warriors went for it is about as astounding as the trade was. I mean, when you consider what the Celtics got and what they gave up, which was essentially nothing because, you know, Joe Barry Carroll turned out to be a great big stiff, but look at what Parrish and McHale brought to the Celtics. You know, look at the era, you know, the championships, the mystique of that, of the 80s and the Celtics and all those great rivalry games with the Lakers and everything like that, and none of that would have been possible without that trade. I went back and scoured the Red Sox have never made any kind of a trade of that impact, at least anything where they made out. You know, they made a lot of trades where the other team made out, but not too much that they've made out. I can't think of many, except the Pedro trade. That would be the only trade that I think, and that's huge, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The Pedro trade that brought Martinez to Boston. In the NFL, they don't have trades like that, so you really can't say. But,
I don't know what that is. I don't know where that's coming from. It's not coming from my computer. I don't know what it is.
But I think mine has to be the Parrish trade.
I like that.
I just can't imagine any team being, A, stupid enough to answer the phone when Red Auerbach's name's on the call. And B, doing business with them. Why would anybody do that? But they did.
I know. Well, my favorite one is, I thought you were going to steal my thunder when you said Red Auerbach, but I go back to when he acquired some guy named Bill Russell.
Yeah.
With the second pick he's Ed McCauley and Cliff Hagan, you know, to get Bill Russell ahead of the, you know, 13 championship.
I qualify these by saying that I recall, because I was, I think, 2 or 3 years old when Red made that trade and
that was
for Russell.
But true, but you know, going back in time, my trade that always bugged me the most in town was when the Red Sox shipped Sparky Lyle for Danny Cater.
You just stole my negative thunder. Sparky Lyle for Danny Cater is one of the all-time worst trades ever.
Oh, God.
You know, that was just horrendous. You know, I hope, speaking of that, two disastrous trades with the Yankees in Red Sox history. I really hope that Al Verdugo doesn't become disastrous trade number 3.
But what did they get, Steve?
They got a couple of scuffed up baseballs and a rosin bag.
A bag of chips and a case of beer. Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, I am no fan of Al Verdugo. I always, the word I use for Alex Verdugo is poser. You know, he's just one of those guys that he plays the part well, but, you know, any time I've ever seen him, he's always struck out or grounded out or something like that. He's just not very reliable. But as far as Red Sox trades go, Lyle for Cater is about as bad as it gets. I mean, notwithstanding salary dumps like Mookie Betts, which that might be one of the all-time worst trades in the history of professional sports. But there was a reason for that, and they were dumping his salary. But although why, I don't know. But if you're looking for what was supposed to be equal value, Lyle for Cater is about as bad as it gets.
Tim and Steve, who did
The Red Sox were looking for a designated hitter at the time, and they figured, you know, he'd fill in the bill, and, you know.
They got somebody that they thought could help them based on what he had done against them and their terrible pitching staff.
But that's why the Red Sox have always done it. They've always picked the guys that have hurt them and not the rest of the league.
Yeah.
Well, guys, who did the Red Sox give up when they got David Ortiz?
They signed him as a free agent.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, because the Twins didn't want him anymore because they had Doug Mankiewicz, who we ended up with anyway later on.
Yeah. At the time, Ortiz really, when the Red Sox signed him, he was like, I think my reaction when the Red Sox signed him was, who? You know, he hadn't established himself yet. Of course, he did right away,
The thing was, he couldn't break into the starting lineup because they were rotating the designated hitters, and it wasn't until he went on something of a streak that finally said, you know, he kept producing every time he was in there, so they finally, because they had
but Jason Giambi's brother.
Right, who was god awful. But again, because they had the name Giambi, the Red Sox said, oh, he can play too. Like, oh, God.
All right. Hey, you got to give the Red Sox credit back in those days. They put a very good competitive team together really fast. You know, and it's too bad that they've gone the other way on stuff like that. But when you consider how fast Theo put that team together, and you know, it was just some of the best baseball we've ever seen, Tim.
And unfortunately, I felt bad the way that Theo's tenure in Boston came to an end. They wanted to blame him for everything that had happened to the Red Sox that wasn't good. You know?
Yeah, Yeah, but look at it this way, Tim. I was very convinced that Halloween that I was going to dress up like a gorilla suit and walk through downtown Boston like Theo did, but I didn't.
You probably have more people calling you Theo.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, what about where baseball is right now with Ohtani's contract?
I think baseball has been traveling down a bad road now for a long, long time. And I don't know. I'm sure they're going to survive. They survive. It survives despite itself. I guess if somebody were going to get a contract like that, it should be Ohtani. He's going to put more rear ends in the seats than anybody else in the majors, for that matter. Who in the majors is a bigger draw than Ohtani is? I mean, the Dodgers, they need Ohtani like I need three more helpings of pasta. But, you know, they're the only team that can afford him. And, I mean, I think what the Yankees got with Soto was going to benefit them far more than Ohtani's going to benefit the Dodgers, because the Dodgers don't need enticements to put people in the seats. Neither do the Red Sox, apparently, but he should have, by rights, if he was going to sign that kind of a contract, he should have gone somewhere where they really needed the attendance boost.
Well, it's only for a year, right? No, I'm sorry. Excuse me. No, I was thinking of something else. No, you're right. I mean, 10 years in the Dodgers, but that's incredible. I mean, and Tim and I were talking about who can afford to go to these games.
I don't know, but when you also look at it, the Dodgers, every year they just load up, and every year they choke in the playoffs. So, you know, if the objective is to win the World Series, the Dodgers have spent a ton of money not to win the World Series. And on the other hand, the Diamondbacks get into the World Series. Tim and I could have cracked that lineup, you know, for what they did hitting. It was terrible.
Yep.
All right, boys. Mine was, I just have to bring this back up again. It was Pitt Martin, Gilles Marotte, and Jack Norris from the Bruins to the Chicago Blackhawks for Phil Esposito, Ken Hodge, and Freddie Stanfield. It wasn't just one. It wasn't just Espo. They got the whole line.
It was a great trade, no question.
Oh, my goodness. And Pitt Martin was the only one who had success with the Blackhawks. Gilles Marotte and Jack Norris just fell off the wagon. And, of course,
that was the first indication that you had, really, you know, what Harry Sinden's mindset was when he built that team up, because boy, oh boy, oh boy, that was an infusion of I don't know what you want to call it right away, but boy, oh boy, that more than, I mean, signing or sure, but more than that, I think that trade transformed the Bruins into the big bad Bruins.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. Yeah, absolutely, and or it all the pieces fit together, but that was the key, I think. Because if you just had Orr with again, Pitt Martin, Gilles Marotte, and Jack Norris, I don't think they'd have become who they were. But I think, to me, that was the most fun trade in my lifetime. I thought that was just incredible. I thought it was a good trade when they did it. Hated to lose Pitt Martin, but damn, getting Phil Esposito, that was the big name at the time. And these other two guys weren't too shabby either.
Well, you know, even Ben, Esposito, he was looked at almost like Bobby Hull's caddy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he got for points, he got because he played on the same line as Bobby Hull. I don't recall. Of course, I was only about 13 or 14 when that happened, but I don't recall there being the hue and cry over that trade that there was when, you know, Parrish or Pedro came to Boston. But I just think that it was a different set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, Sinden really hadn't established himself yet. And a matter of fact, the only thing I remember about Harry Sinden was a Bruins game the first year he was a coach when somebody yelled, "Hey, Sinden, there's a bus for Oklahoma leaving in 10 minutes. Be under it." You know?
Yeah, but that wasn't Harry Sinden's doing. That was a Milt Schmidt deal.
Well, but coaches always have input in those kinds of trades. I don't think Milt Schmidt or any coach, any GM really, would say would just make a trade and then say to the coach, "Here, here are your new players." I'm sure that there was plenty of behind-the-scenes discussion going on before that trade was made. And I think Harry subsequently proved that he wasn't a bad Wheeler dealer either. So.
True. Very true.
All right, boys, we're going to move it on. Steve, always a pleasure. Keep those columns coming.
All right, my best to Mike when you talk to him.
Very good. All right. All right, talk to you later, Steve. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, Steve, we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right, that's Steve Krause, who is a sports journalist and a font of knowledge, as these guys always are. We'll get Mike Grenier on here next. I forgot about the Parrish deal. That was pretty big.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't bad at all.
No, what wasn't bad? I remember watching, seeing McHale play as a senior at Minnesota, and I'm thinking, boy, would he look good on the Celtics?
Is that right?
So long.
Yeah.
He ran the floor, which is, you know, really unusual for a guy 6'10", 11" to be screaming down the wings of the court. And I'm going, holy Moses! You know, this would be great for the Celtics, because just give them so much more flexibility. And Parrish, coming out of Centenary. He was highly touted as a college player, but we didn't know a whole lot about him because he's out on the West Coast. And certainly, when he got here, he remained something of an enigma because he was just quiet. He didn't, and he even said, "I didn't need to do the talking because Larry and those guys did all of it for me." And his job was to play defense, to score points inside, and again, take the pressure off the other guys, and he did that so well for his time here.
I think the thing I remember about Robert Parrish being interviewed, you know, in the sportscasts on 4, 5, and 7, he would always say, "Well, we have to do better both individually and collectively as a team." That was his favorite phrase, and it's so Celtic-like, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's. Like par for the course when, in the heyday of the past that we just got done experiencing, you know, you listen to the guys in the post game comments. Well, we all did well. We did well in offense, defense. You know, it wasn't about the individual; it was about the team, and that's the way the '80s Celtics went about business. You know, it wasn't about any one of them; it was about the collective.
All right, I have to do better individually here, pushing these buttons. So we're going to try again. This time we'll try to get a hold of Mike Grenier. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. We will take this break, and we'll come back in one form or another.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we have Mike Grenier on the line. Tim Kearns is with us. Mike, a sports journalist and our basketball insider. And Mike, before we get to Celtics and NBA talk, which I know you're chomping at the bit to get at, we want to hear about your favorite sports trade.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I spent all afternoon trying to. There's so many of my favorites, but if you hear any background noise, by the way, it's because Patrick Mahomes is still whining and crying.
Oh, I like that one.
Have you seen that kind of immaturity from a so-called star player in a long time? And you know what? Before I start the trade, but it's been on my mind all day because he acted so immaturely and so poorly post-game. But in the post-game, he said that he's never seen that kind of infraction in his 7 years as a Kansas City Chief. Well, he has amnesia, guys, because if you might remember Tom Brady's final year with the Patriots when they won the Super Bowl, they basically had lost that game against Kansas City when Brady threw an interception, but Dee Ford was lined up in the neutral zone on defense for the Kansas City Chiefs, so the interception was nullified. The Patriots kept their drive alive, and then they went in and they won that game. It was the AFC Championship. So that was just 4 years ago. Mahomes has forgotten about that. It was the same, very same infraction, lined up in the neutral zone.
Well, yeah, obviously, there's a gap in the coaching of the Kansas City Chiefs that they can't remind their players, if your foot is in line with the football.
And Jim.
Not in a good fit. And I was, you know, on the committee a little bit earlier, everybody is tearing CBS apart for their coverage of Mahomes' post-game rant. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, they wouldn't have put the camera on Tom Brady. They used to put it on Tom Brady all the time during the game when he was going up and down the sideline, chewing out his offensive line, chewing out receivers, chewing out the defense. They didn't mind that. They didn't mind it then, but no, all of a sudden their little boy is having a tantrum because, you know, a call went against him. Oh, gee. You know, it was a penalty. CBS kept showing the penalty. It was a penalty. I mean, his foot was clearly, you know, in the noose. He couldn't be there.
And the other half of that, Tim, that's, like, unfathomable, is Andy Reid, who should know better because he's up there in age and he's been around the league for 100 years, much like Belichick, complaining after the game that the player should have been warned by the official.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Well, yeah, because if you're lined up offside, right, is it the players aren't owed a warning? Because had that happened, then the Buffalo Bills would have had every right to go berserk if they had warned the wide receiver that he was offside, because there was a pre-snap penalty. Why should he be warned? I mean, the Buffalo Bills stand to benefit because it's clearly a penalty. So Andy Reid, to me, proved to be some sort of, I don't know, he wanted favoritism or something. I don't get it from an NFL coach, because he was clearly in the wrong, saying that his player should have been warned.
He was pulling a Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. Yep.
In the playoffs when the Belichick sent in one of his offensive linemen as an eligible receiver.
I remember that.
They made the announcement.
Yep.
Nobody on Baltimore paid attention to it.
Right.
And the Pats scored the touchdown, and Harbaugh was apoplectic. How can they do that?
Bad thing is, in the long run, he had the rule changed. They changed the rule in the off season that year.
Yeah.
So that they wouldn't do that again. I remember Brady clearly in the post-game press conference saying, well, we know the rules, right?
And don't think that didn't sit well.
but anyway.
Think back, like, how many rules have been changed in Major League Sports because of Boston teams?
Oh, yeah.
The Larry Bird rule.
Yeah.
Can't draft like that now.
Right, right, right. And, of course, that Brady one that we... Yeah,
would have some new rule put in to deal with something that the Patriots did. Oh, wait, you can't have a snowblower, a snowplow come across the field and clear a space for your field goal kicker.
Right, right. Right, exactly. Now, on the trades, I was hearing some of that, and I know that you guys discussed Esposito, Rick. That's a great one. So I don't want to be redundant here and talk about a trade or two that has already been mentioned. So which other trades have been mentioned, Rick?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's it. Tim, what'd you have?
Oh, I have Bill Russell.
Okay. I'm glad, because that was going to be my all-time favorite one, because, I mean, I was only 7 years old when it happened, but obviously to trade basically the Ice Capades, right, Tim? They basically traded the rights to the Ice Capades, or gave the other team a chance to see the Ice Capades, and in exchange, that team did not draft Bill Russell, and it allowed Auerbach to draft Bill Russell. And, of course, Tim, you must have mentioned the territorial draft in those days. Tommy Heinsohn was the first guy that Auerbach took that year, because in those days, it was a territorial trade where players from a certain region of the country couldn't be drafted by other regions of the country, trying to protect that player and that team in that area. In other words, if you were in the New York area, you sort of had the rights to all the New York area players. If you were in Los Angeles, you had the rights to all the L.A. players, you know? So the territorial pick was for the Celtics was Tommy Heinsohn because he played at Holy Cross.
Did they also use that rule to get Bob Cousy?
Yes, I believe they did. Yes, I believe they did, because Bob Cousy, of course, played at Holy Cross. And so Auerbach was sort of like thinking, okay, I've got Tommy Heinsohn, but I also want Bill Russell. So he leveraged this whole thing with his owner, Walter Brown, who owned the Ice Capades, and it was a very lucrative venture. Remember, when we were kids, the Ice Capades would play at the Boston Garden around Christmas time or something like that, and you'd bring your family and go see the Ice Capades for a couple of bucks, and it was entertainment and all that stuff. But to use that as a sort of like come on for an opposing team not to draft Bill Russell, and then so Auerbach wound up with Tommy Heinsohn and Bill Russell. So what a steal, right? What a steal.
What's the kick in the net? Most people don't know that Tommy Heinsohn won Rookie of the Year.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, anyway, guys, so there's two or three that I mean, I've got five or six here that I love. Did anyone mention Randy Moss?
Nope.
Okay, here we go. 2007, as we know. Randy Moss, how about this, guys? He went from Oakland, where he was disgruntled, to the Patriots. Belichick gave the Oakland Raiders a fourth-round pick. A fourth-round pick for Randy Moss, who that particular year, 2007, I mean, caught balls for 1,400, almost like 1,500 yards, and a NFL record 23 touchdowns. And as we know, and part of the memory is painful, that Patriots team went 16-0 in the regular season, 18-0 counting the playoffs until the Super Bowl game when David Tyree caught the ball on his helmet and the Giants upset the Patriots. But what a pickup for a fourth-round pick, right? Randy Moss, and he was productive for a couple more years, and then, of course, he was disgruntled with New England, and they had to get rid of him. But my goodness, to pick up a Randy Moss, that quality of a receiver, one of the greatest of all time, for a fourth-round pick is mind-boggling, and that was Belichick at his very best, I thought.
Yeah, I think one of the sad things one might not remember is the fact that at the end of that Super Bowl game, Brady threw three times down the sideline trying to hook up with him.
Yeah.
And they had a new kicker called Gostkowski who they cut Matt Barr to keep. The kid had a bigger leg, and Belichick wouldn't trust the kid with winning the game or tying the game with a field goal.
Uh-huh, yep. And you know, guys, the other important aspect of that particular season was that Belichick also picked up Wes Welker for practically nothing, because Wes Welker used to plague him when he played with, the Dolphins, I think it was?
Yep.
And, you know, and basically Belichick said, if you can't beat him, let him join us. So he acquired Wes Welker that same year, and I think Wes Welker had like three 100-catch seasons in a row after Belichick acquired him that same year, 2007. So those were two incredible pickups by Belichick in 2007. But Randy Moss, my goodness, that's, to me, one of the all-time great trades, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm glad you brought that one up. Excellent.
Yeah. Now, how about this one, guys? You guys will remember this one clearly, and I had the pleasure of covering this particular team. You know, Larry Bird was in his second year, and in the 1980 draft, you know, Auerbach sends two first-round picks to the Golden State Warriors and ends up with Robert Parrish and the third overall pick, who became Kevin McHale. And all Golden State got out of that was Joe Barry Carroll, who was a very good player at Purdue, a big man, but he never really panned out in the NBA. But by acquiring Parrish and McHale to go with Larry Bird, as you guys know, that was the foundation of three championships teams, 1981, 84, and 86. So, to me, again, that was a phenomenal steal on Auerbach's part. One of the great swindles of all time.
Well, Steve mentioned that one, too. And
okay.
Yeah, that was his favorite. And, you know, it's funny how it works, because you think at the time, I mean, I didn't follow the NBA, so I didn't know who Robert Parrish was or Kevin McHale. And, oh, boy, is this sweet. Tremendous.
Yeah. Yep, yep. Well, how about Kevin Garnett then? Kevin Garnett. Oh,
that's
no.
a good one.
Here's a good one. Here's a good one, guys. When Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce were over the hill, right? I remember this convoluted trade the Celtics made. So they sent Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and Jason Terry, who was also over the hill, and somebody named DJ White to Brooklyn, and they acquired Gerald Wallace, Chris Humphries, Marshawn Brooks, Chris Joseph, Keith Bogans. Now, all those names mean nothing to this day. However, they also got three first-round picks, and they ended up being guys named Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Okay? So that was an incredible move by Danny Ainge, actually, because neither team was going anywhere, Brooklyn or the Celtics. They basically traded bodies, but in the process, Ainge acquired these draft picks that turned out to be Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Hey,
so that's pretty phenomenal.
That's tremendous. I want to ask you, this comes to mind. The Celtics got Don Nelson, Bailey Howell, and another big man. I can't remember who it was. Do you remember who the third guy was back in that era? Yeah, sort of
No, I'd have to look it up.
Oh, it
the big red-headed center, I think.
No. I'm thinking of something in the mold of Wes Unseld. But anyway, just Don Nelson and Bailey Howell.
It wasn't not John Thompson.
Nope, but of that ilk. Yep. Anyway.
Wasn't Wayne Embry.
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of. Maybe I am.
Yep.
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of.
Yep.
So he got.
Yep.
I mean, what I remember, he picked these guys up off the scrap heap. I mean, Don Nelson and Bailey Howell. They were supposed to be role players, and Bailey Howell at the end of his career.
Right.
And they just, you know, they lasted for quite a while.
Yeah, they did. They did. I remember Bailey Howell. He kind of was like a slow moving, you know, white man can't jump type of personality. But he had a good jump shot, and he had that veteran savvy, and he brought so much to the table for the Celtics. Yeah, I mean, Auerbach was great at picking up those old veterans, Carl Braun, Willie Nalls, all those guys that became like sixth, seventh, eighth men on the roster, and they blended in so beautifully with the starting five and brought the Celtics more championships because they added to the depth, you know what I mean? So that was a great thing. There's one that I wanted to add in baseball that I don't know if Steve mentioned, but did you guys talk about Pedro Martinez at all?
Yeah, he did.
Okay. All right, so we'll skip over that one. But here's one of my favorites, guys. Okay, Dennis Johnson comes to the Celtics, all right? And what I remember about that is the Celtics traded Rick Roby.
Wick Wobey.
You know, a slow guy. Mm. I remember covering, and Gary Larrabee would assert the same thing. We'd watch him play, and he was a great kid out of Kentucky, but he was really slow, even going to the basket and dunking the ball. He was slow. And the Celtics basically acquired Dennis Johnson for Rick Roby. And you know who was the most upset guy in the Boston Garden when that happened?
Larry Bird.
Of course, right, Tim? And why was that?
That was his boy. He spoke, and Larry spoke openly about how upset he was about that.
Yeah, and Bird used to, that was his barroom buddy after the games, on off nights or on the road. That was his barroom buddy, his pub buddy. And he hated seeing Rick Roby leave. And Rick Roby and Larry had a great friendship, a great relationship. And then the Celtics get this guy, Dennis Johnson, you know, and all of a sudden, Dennis Johnson becomes this incredibly motivated player who, again, was a big key in those championship games in 1984 and 86. So a great acquisition, again, by the Celtics for a guy that Rick Roby, who was basically a journeyman, a really nice guy and all that, off the court, a good team guy. But Dennis Johnson, as we know, was instrumental in those Celtics victories over the Lakers and over the Houston Rockets championships in 84 and 1986, respectively.
Was he coached by Casey Jones? Because he was a defensive player too, right?
Yeah. And I remember, Tim, you remember this, even though he hated losing Rick Roby, I think at one point Larry Bird said, Dennis Johnson was my all-time favorite teammate.
Oh.
Yep.
Wow.
So Dennis Johnson ended up meeting, I think, and it's not because Dennis Johnson had the greatest talent in the world, but Dennis Johnson, much like the way, let's say, like Drew Holiday is playing now, Dennis Johnson was willing to do anything he could to help the Celtics. And he had a nice game. He was a terrific, tremendous defensive player, a real hard-nosed, intense defensive player, as you guys know. He would hit. He was not a great shooter, but he somehow would come up and hit those big shots in the Game 5 of the playoffs or Game 7 of the playoffs. And he was a big part of that Celtics championship era. I mean, I just talking to Dennis Johnson many times, his heart was always in the right place when he played with the Celtics. I mean, he played in one championship series, Tim, and you might remember when he was with the Seattle Sonics, where he took a lot of heat because in the championship game, he shot like 0 for 14 or 0 for 16 or something like that. In these current days of Twitter accounts, he would have been lambasted for years. But in those days, hardly anybody knew about it. And he was still criticized by fans who kind of knew what was going on. However, he came to the Celtics and put all that aside and worked to win championships with Kevin McHale and Larry Bird and that whole group, Jerry Seasting and Robert, you know, that whole group. He was a huge part of that with Danny Ainge, Gerald Henderson, such great, great all-around talent on that team.
Yeah, you know, and the thing about it, he didn't. I remember going to a Celtics Seattle game when Jack Sitma was the center.
Terrific player.
Oh yeah, and just tough inside. Just, you know, old time tough. Loved playing down underneath the basket like they used to. And I just remember cussing out DJ because I mean he was just killer and not shooting, but driving to the hoop. To the hoop. Jesus, stop this. Yeah, because they couldn't stop him.
Right, yeah. Right. He was
fearless going to the hoop.
He was a gritty, gritty guy. And there's one more I want to mention, guys. Paul Silas is one of my favorite human beings of all time. Passed away a couple of years ago.
That's who I was thinking of, was Silas.
Yeah, he came to the Celtics in 72, and it was the Phoenix Suns had him at the time, and Auerbach traded for him. And he hardly gave up anything. I think he gave up the rights to sign Charlie Scott to the Phoenix Suns. And ironically, Charlie Scott came back to the Celtics a few years later, and in 1976, when the Celtics beat the Phoenix Suns, including that Game 5 triple overtime, after that Game 5, Tim, everyone was exhausted, and they had to fly out to Phoenix, play like 36 hours later, and the only guy that had any energy was Charlie Scott. And he actually won that game for the Celtics in a very low-scoring game. But Paul Silas basically was acquired for the rights to Charlie Scott. And Silas, of course, was a huge factor in those championships in 1974 and 76. And he did not want to come to Boston. I remember him. I actually talked to him about this because he had just bought a new home in Phoenix for his family. He thought he was going to, you know, play the rest of his career in Phoenix and all that stuff. And he did not want to come, but Auerbach, over a period of months, convinced him to come to the Celtics because of their tradition and their ability to win championships, and he felt that Silas would fit right in. He finally won over Paul Silas, but it took a while. It wasn't like one of those things where Silas was ecstatic to come to a team that had great history. He didn't believe in the so-called Celtic mystique, and it took a long time to win him over, but when they did, they had themselves a workhorse of a guy on the glass. Great offensive rebounder. He could score in the paint. Just hustled forever and played great defense. I loved what he brought to the table every single night. His attitude, his willingness, his competitive nature was second to nobody that I've ever seen. He was like a Dave Cowens type, okay? He applied that sort of intensity to his approach to the game every single night.
Were Curtis Rowe and the other UCLA
Sidney Wicks
were they part of that? Did Red ship them out?
No, I think because Silas came earlier. They came aboard, Tim, in the late 70s when the Celtics were already kind of down, and Auerbach had liked Curtis Rowe's game at UCLA. And he acquired both Curtis Rowe and Sidney Wicks, and when they got to Boston, neither one of them wanted to really play. They didn't want to sacrifice. You know, they're sort of like, the Zion Williamsons of that era.
But you guys, and Curtis Rowe was good, but Sidney Wicks was outrageous when he was at UCLA.
Yes, he was.
He was dominant. And I just loved watching those guys play, because he especially was so intense. And I saw them come to the Celtics, and I'm thinking, oh, amazing how fast I soured on these two guys watching them rope up the court.
Yeah, and you know what? The saddest part of that, Tim, was that that was the Havlicek's final couple of years in the league.
Yeah.
And he hated playing with those guys. You know, Havlicek, of course, came up in the 60s, early 60s, and played with Russell and Sam Jones and KC Jones and that whole group of guys. He won like eight titles. So to have a couple of guys from UCLA who didn't want to play anymore, who were pretty lazy on the court, that Havlicek just detested that whole atmosphere, the whole culture of what became. It was so un-Celtic-like to have guys who really didn't feel like playing, who didn't care about being team players. Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe only cared about themselves.
Yeah.
All right. We got a couple of minutes here.
Yes.
Mike, your thoughts on the Celtics?
I think, you know what, if you look at it now, 16-5, that we're at the quarter pole at the Indianapolis 500. That means if you multiply by four, we're talking 61, 62 wins. So, to me, they're certainly on the right track. I think it's important here, the next five games they have at home. They play Cleveland, that scheduling quirk they have to prevent teams from traveling too much. They have back-to-back home games against Cleveland, and they have back-to-back home games against the Orlando Magic, and it's part of a five-game homestand. So I think the Celtics need to take advantage of this homestand to build on what they've already done, and because obviously the Milwaukee Bucks aren't going anywhere. They're right on their backs. Orlando's still playing well. Mm-hmm. So, nothing has been established in terms of domination, but the Celtics are in the driver's seat, and that's what you want to see at this point. And obviously, Rick Porzingis is coming back. Last week we talked, you were a little bit worried about when he'd come back, but he missed basically four games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not too bad. And I think he worked very hard to come back, and he looked good Friday night against the Knicks. So I think to have him back is a huge thing, and we go from here. I just think they have a good lineup, starters, and I think that, with Peyton Pritchard playing pretty well off the bench, and Howes are playing extremely well off the bench, and Horford, you know, once Porzingis came back, Horford comes off the bench, and I think Horford's having a tremendous season, both offensively and defensively.
All right, I want to ask you guys one final comment. I heard Jason Tatum, or read about Jason Tatum, a week or so ago, and I don't remember if we talked about this, but he said something along the lines about playing, and he said, I had to play in a particular game or whatever it was. Yes, I'm going to play in that game because I know there are families or kids out there who come to the game to see me. Now, that wasn't being selfish. That was being honest. And what he was saying was, you know, people pay money to come see us play. I'm going to play. And I thought, damn, that's a good thing for him to say.
It is, and it's like counter to what many of the players are doing these days. About even though the commissioner has instituted a program to fine teams or something if they sit their best players out in a nationally televised game, it's really not applicable. They have not been able to apply any kind of penalties to teams. Teams are just kind of blowing that off. So if Embiid wants to take a night off, he can take a night off. If James Harden wants to take a night off, he can do it. They're not really applying any kind of penalty to the team. There's no teeth. There's no teeth to that law that Commissioner Silver put in. It's a nice thought, but there's nothing behind it to enforce it. So I love what you just said about Tatum, because I agree. I remember, I think he was ill. He was sort of questionable because he was ill. But like, he sucked it up, and he played. And like the way these tickets are these days, Rick, I know I went to the Garden just a week or so ago looking for two tickets at the box office for my sister-in-law, and low seats were $444. That's $888 for two tickets.
No way.
I called my sister-in-law. She says, no, don't do it.
Well, oh, Lordy.
I was glad not to do it. So then you talk about Ticketmaster and all these secondary markets. They charge even more. So the Celtics are an extremely popular product. They have the highest ticket prices in the NBA. Even the Knicks don't match them on an average basis, I don't think. The Knicks, of course, have a long-standing tradition of filling the building, because there are a lot of celebrities that go and a lot of people want to be seen at Madison Square Garden, even if the Knicks aren't that good. But the Knicks are pretty good. But the Celtics have the highest ticket prices, and I love what Tatum did. I mean, he wants to play. I think Porzingis coming back as quickly as he did, he wants to play. And, this is the kind of team that you want to root for. Unlike you know, if you've seen Zion Williamson lately, I mentioned him a bit earlier, he's been putting on weight during the season. How do you these guys spend so much time in the training room and on the court going hard, 100%, and yet Zion Williamson, who gets has a $200 million contract, is putting on weight. I mean,
you say that like it's a surprise, Mike.
Yeah, it's a surprise only because in the off season he did slim down, and there was a lot of talk about him coming out with a vengeance. Hmm. Okay, and he hasn't come out with a vengeance. He's come out with a hamburger, you know, or two or three. And it's like stunning. If you're part of, like what you said, Rick, about fans paying to see, and if you're in New Orleans, and the only option is to see the New Orleans Pelicans, who are a pretty good team. Made the playoffs last year with Zion sitting it out with various injuries. You're paying to see Zion Williamson. These fans want to see Zion Williamson, but you're not seeing Zion Williamson at his best.
Right.
You're seeing him be lazy, and that's exactly what you were talking about with Tatum. It's just like the opposite of the Tatum effect.
Well, I was happy to see that from Tatum, and it wasn't an ego thing. It was a realization of what the role model can be, and I appreciated that. Tim, final words, final thoughts?
When Mike mentioned Zion, the story online, and it showed him, he looked like the Goodyear blimp.
yeah. Well, there's been a lot of players like that come up and down the pike, and they don't last too long. And sadly for for fans of the New Orleans Pelicans, they're not going to get to see a championship caliber player because he doesn't want to be one, I don't think. You know, whereas at least the Celtics at this point are still pointed in the right direction. And I'm excited about the rest of the season and the Eastern Conference race with the Bucks and the Miami Heat and all these other good teams. It's fun to watch.
All right, we'll see where we are in another week. And then, of course, the next 2 weeks after that, there's something going on, something about holidays or something or other. So
yes, Christmas. We'll... New Year.
Oh, that's what it is. Yes, yes.
That's what it is.
All right. So we will be back next week. Mike, always fun. I appreciate it. And we'll focus on the Celtics and the rest of the NBA next week.
That sounds absolutely great, guys. Great talking to you. I love talking trades. That was fun.
Thank you, Mike. It was. Thank you so much for your expertise.
Yep.
Take care.
Yeah,
Mike. All right. That's Mike Grenier, who is a sports journalist and our basketball insider. I don't know, Tim, where do we go from here?
Yeah, that sounds like a song, Rick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's who does that? Oh, I know. Blackmore's Night does it. I imagine other people do too. I don't know, but we didn't even talk about the Patriots. But I would say in a quick maybe 30-second, 1 minute thing here, that game was fun to watch the other night, Tim.
Yeah, I kind of missed a lot of it. I was out, but. Hey, they turned the corner. You know, they can still make the playoffs, they say, you know. Even though they're saying, okay, well, they've been eliminated for the first time in, like, 20 years. There's still hope. We can still get in, you know. Everybody, the league is so mediocre this year, you know.
Well,
so we'll see what happens.
If they could just trend upward, that's all I would ask for. So we'll see, as you say. Okay, Coach, we'll talk to you later. Thank you so much, as always, and we'll see you Monday.
All righty, Rick.
All right, Tim, be well. Take care.
You too.
All right, bye-bye. That is our sports analyst and ambassador of goodwill, Tim Kearns, for Bill Newell, who's working right now putting together stuff for tomorrow, including the Salem News Sports Writers podcast that will drop around 8 o'clock, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, for Tim, I'm Rick Moore. Be well, be safe, and do the right thing.